My grandmother turned 70 a few years ago, and she's a good old Southern gentlewoman, so if she knew that I was telling you how old she was, she would not be pleased, but we'll just keep that between the two of us. All of her children and grandchildren decided, they conspired to converge on a single spot to have a nice celebratory dinner for her. We came from the north, the south, the east, and the west, and she had no idea. One of her daughters, who happened to be my mom, brought my grandmother into the restaurant. And when she was coming, we all ducked down because we didn't want her to see us. And when she came around the corner, we all popped up and said, "Surprise!" She grinned like a Cheshire cat and couldn't stop smiling the entire time. And maybe you can remember a similar event, a surprising moment. You know, maybe it wasn't a party. Maybe it was a surprise birth, a surprise promotion, a surprise, whatever. And we also know that they aren't always good, are they? Sometimes surprises can be heart-rending, heart-stopping. Sometimes surprises can cause a lot of pain. But whether good or bad, what makes a surprise is its unpredictability. I mean, it literally comes out of nowhere. It jumps out at you. It meets you when you are least expecting it. It is not usually something of which you are aware because, well, it's a surprise. Paul and Silas, in a very familiar story, have just left Lydia's house and are building Christ's church in a surprising fashion. They are walking around. I mean, they're walking. And a slave girl encounters the two of them. There's something surprising about this girl. She has the spirit of divination. That means she can tell fortunes. Something about Paul and Silas strikes her, and so she follows them, saying, "These men are slaves of the Most High God. They have come to show us a way of salvation. These men are slaves of the Most High God. They have come to show us a way of salvation. These men are slaves of the Most High God. They've come to show us a way of salvation." For days and days and days and days and days, this went on. And if the repetition is getting on your nerves, can you imagine how irritated these disciples would have been? Yes, Paul and Silas, disciples of Jesus. Yes, called to build God's church. Yes, annoyed, irritated. Surprising, isn't it? They were human after all, it seems. For we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And sometimes it can just become too much. One can be called to do God's work and irritated at the same time. Sometimes people and things can get on our nerves, even though we are serving God. But that's another sermon for another day. But what we do see is what can happen when we act out of irritation. Paul is so irritated that he looks at this woman and rebukes the spirit of divination out of her. Hooray, we say, initially. But we have to be careful because now this girl, whose very value was derived from her ability to tell fortunes and make money from her masters, is now left vulnerable. When we act out of irritation, even with our called selves, the results can end up disastrous. The slave girl's in trouble, for now she can no longer be exploited in the way that she once was. Now she is of no use to the masters, and they are mad. They are furious at Paul and Silas for taking away their money-making machine. What is interesting for us, however, is how the masters approach it. They don't just go to the powers in charge and tell them, "Paul and Silas destroyed our ability to make money off of our slave girl." They don't tell the truth about why they are angry with Paul and Silas. It's about money, but they use another mechanism to hem up Paul and Silas. They use what I want to call sleight of hand. When the powers that be want to make a case against the powerless, they may often use this tactic, sleight of hand. It's a diversionary tactic that focuses us away from what really matters towards some other aim, sleight of hand, a surprise of sorts. They didn't want to talk about the reality of the money, which was the real issue. Always remember to follow the money to get to the truth, because sometimes the powers that be don't want us to find the truth, but that's also another sermon for another day. The masters didn't tell the truth. they used something else. These men are Jews. They have come to make trouble. They want us to break the Roman law. These men are Jews. These men are Jews. Paul and Silas were bona fide Roman citizens, but the masters didn't say that because Roman citizens were afforded certain privileges, least of all that they could not be beaten and thrown into jail. But the masters didn't say that. They didn't even tell the truth about the slave girl and the money. These men are Jews. They did what they knew would get everybody's attention. They found the difference. They targeted the diversity. These men are Jews. You know the Jews, the ones who don't worship like us. These men are Jews. You know the ones who are minorities. These men are Jews. You know the ones who are talking about this Jesus movement that we are trying to stamp out, this faction of Jesus followers. These men are Jews. And if that wasn't enough, the masters continued by saying, they are troublemakers, and they want us to break the law. These men are different from us. They've come to cause trouble, and they're trying to make us break the law. My mind, doesn't history have a way of repeating itself? We've heard the masters use the same tactics and words today. These people are illegals. These people are LGBTQ. These people are black. These people are white. These people are differently abled. These people are poor. These people are not the traditional type of UMC that I remember. These people don't worship the kind of way, the right way. These people are young. These people are old. These people aren't educated. These men are Jews. They've come to cause trouble, and they want us to break the law. All types of laws, societal laws, church governance laws, so-called spiritual laws. The masters didn't care about what made Paul and Silas like them. All they cared about was what made them different. Have you ever been on the other side of, you know, those people over there? Have you ever been the one to say it? These men are Jews. They've come to cause trouble, and they want us to break the law. Oh, and it worked, didn't it? The masters appealed to the powers that be, and the powers that be and the crowd joined and became a moral majority and beat up these Roman citizens whose rights were ignored because diversity was the most important means by which to build the wall of separation among them. Diversity wasn't a thing that they celebrated. It was a thing to be lifted up to divide. And these innocent men, unarmed, saved their faith in Jesus Christ, were beat up and thrown into jail. This isn't at all surprising. This seems to be the way that the world works. When the powerful are threatened in some way, they go about planting seeds of division with this sleight of hand technique, and instead of celebrating difference, it is lifted up to divide, and the minorities often end up worse for wear. The powers that be have an interesting way of using the law as a battering ram to keep minorities at bay. Paul and Silas are certainly in a bad way. They have been beaten, their rights have been ignored, and they are on lockdown in jail. This has to be one of the darkest moments that they could have ever imagined. I would think this is not what they had in mind after experiencing the warmth in Lydia's house. Sometimes there are good surprises. Sometimes they're bad surprises. Other time, there are heart-rending surprises, and this would definitely qualify as that. They are stuck. Paul and Silas are suffering, but they decide to praise anyway. They sing praises to God in their darkest moments, and maybe that's a lesson for us, that we can still find enough of something to praise God in our darkest moments, but that's not where we want to land. You know what happened, right? There was a huge earthquake and all of the cell doors came open, right? Paul, Silas, and all the other prisoners had the ability to just run out of there, and the jailer knew it. When the doors were open, he pulled out a sword to kill himself because the law stated that if a soldier lost a prisoner, that his life was also forfeit. And you could multiply that by how many ever prisoners were in the jail. See, the empire's law kills, but it doesn't just affect the people who are the minorities. It affects everybody. It affected the girl, it affected Paul and Silas, and it affected the master's machinations, and now it is affecting the jailer. You don't have to be a minority to be negatively affected by the evils of the land. Here, the soldier who has given his life to the state was also in danger. Ironically, the prisoner was in prison too. The minorities, Paul and Silas, are leading a predictable life. No rights, enchained, in jail because of diversity. There was once a woman who had a bonsai tree that one of her enemies had destroyed by cutting off all the branches. She came back the next day to see if there was any life left on the tree. And much to the doubt of her companion, she finds a shoot coming out of the tree. And she tells her friend, in suffering, there is still opportunity. There is an opportunity in the midst of their suffering. Diversity got them in jail. Difference was the factor that enraged the crowd to get them beat and thrown into the cells. But God has a way of surprising us when we least expect it. In their darkest moments and in their hardest predicament, God comes on the scene, and we know God is there because of the jailer. The fact that the jailer's life had had a collision with Paul and Silas was no accident. The fact that he and his whole family were saved was evidence that the jailer had had a void within, and he had been searching to fill it. We don't know how happy he was serving the government, but long before Paul and Silas even stepped into the city, God had a surprise waiting for the jailer, and God used what the masters had employed to persecute Paul and Silas to get it to him. They may have a problem with who you are. They may attack the gifts that God has given you. They may deny your rights and privileges as a human being, but God has a jailer out there who needs to meet you, and God can use your gifts, the ones previously exploited and discarded, to bring freedom to the bound jailer. Sure, I hear you. The journey is painful, but it is not for naught. Sure, we didn't deserve it, but it's not for nothing. God has a jailer that needs to meet you. God can give us meaning and purpose even in our darkest and seemingly meaningless moments. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. Surprise! And what's more, God even has a new life in store for the jailer. In suffering, the ones called of God still found opportunity when there should not have been any. Hope in a hellish ordeal. What a surprising turn of events. And here we are wondering in our darkest moment when God is going to just show up and do something, feeling stuck. And all of a sudden things get shaken up a bit, and we see that God has gifted us beyond measure. The surprise gift is difference, diversity. It was diversity that brought about deliverance. It was variety that brought about victory. It was multiplicity that yielded the miracle in the jail. What a surprising turn of events. In January of 1988, Apple, a fledgling startup, wrote a commercial that featured a song where Randy Newman is singing, and he says, "I'm different, don't care who knows it." Did y'all remember that? "Something about me, not the same." Apple was different, and we know that Apple was different because most of us have iPhones or i-something in our pockets right now. But more importantly, you are different, and you are yet called according to God's purpose. Don't let anyone ever make you think otherwise. I'm almost finished. You remember Joseph? You remember Joseph, don't you? He was different from his brothers. He had gifts from God that they did not like, and so they put him in a pit and sold him away. Joseph worked a while, ended up in jail, and years later, served the Pharaoh until he became second in command. While he was in command, he helped to build a store of food for years to come. Those same brothers came to him needing food because of the famine. When they found out that this brother, whom they'd sold away because he was different, had saved them, they apologized profusely. When they found out that he was the one that was like one of them, like in this text, they apologized. And to their apology, Joseph said, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." Yes, the masters meant it for evil. Yes, the masters mean it for evil, but God has a surprise up God's sleeve. God can take negative intentions and turn them around for good. God's track record of turning things around is becoming less and less surprising. Jesus had a surprise moment, didn't he? This is Ascension Sunday. You know, we're celebrating the Ascension, but we can't celebrate the Ascension without remembering those 3 days, dark days in the tomb. But he rose triumphantly, and he's been given a name that is above every name. But it doesn't stop there, because in the midst of Jesus's new life, he liberates us too. Surprise! Thanks be to God.